Let's look at a few things here in the Yalkut Biurim on Megillah Daf Yud Ches Amud Beis. As far as a hefsek in the middle of Kriyas HaMegillah, if it was Machmas Ones, and a period of time passed which was Kidei Ligmar Skula, in which he could have read the entire Megillah, there's machlokas between the Shulchan Aruch and the Ramah in terms of hefsek in the middle of Kriyat Shema, Machmas Ones. Again, we're talking about Shabba Kidei Ligmar Skula. Does he have to go back to the beginning of Kriyat Shema? And according to the Shulchan Aruch, the way he paskins, and maybe we'll get a chance to see this inside, the halacha is in Simon Samachay, like the Rif who came before the Shulchan Aruch, that Ein Tzarech Lachzar L'Rosh. Only in Tefillah is there a halacha that no matter what, even Machmas Ones, you have to go back to the beginning of Tefillah if it was Shakadei Ligmar Skula. The Ramah, on the other hand, paskins like the Sar Mikutzi, that if he was Mafsik in Kriyat Shema Machmas Ones, and he a time period passed of Kidei Ligmar Skula, he has to go back to the beginning of Kriyat Shema. And as far as Megillah is concerned, let's understand what would be the din if he was Shoah in the middle of Kriyas HaMegillah, Kidei Ligmar Skula. Does he have to go back and read the Megillah from the beginning? Now again, if it was Shoah Shalom Machmas Ones, then everybody agrees that he has to go back to the beginning. But in the case of Shoah Machmas Ones, since according to the Shulchan Aruch, in Kriyat Shema is not Chozer L'Rosh, and that's a mitzvah d'oraisa, how much more so in Kriyas HaMegillah, which is only the Rabbanon, that he's not Chozer L'Rosh. However, according to the Ramah, it's not clear. The Ramah says in Kriyat Shema, which is d'oraisa, you have to go back, like the Sarakutzi, and read Kriyat Shema from the top, take it from the top. What would be in a mitzvah d'Rabbanon, like Megillah in our case? Would we be Machmir? And even in the case of Shoah Machmas Ones, he has to go back to the beginning of the Megillah. Now, in Darchei Moshe, in Simon Tov Chav Beis, Le'inyan Mitzvah Rabbanon, like Kriyas HaHalel and Kriyas HaMegillah, he seems to assume that we pass in L'Hakil, like the Rif, that you don't have to go back to the beginning, even in the case of Shoah Kidei Ligmar Skula. However, there are other poskim, contemporary and a little bit after the Ramah, who disagree. The Levush, the Bach, the Elio Rava, they disagree with the Darchei Moshe. And according to them, even in Mitzvah Rabbana, we pass like the Sar Mikutzu L'Chumra, and in the case of Shaul Ligmar Skula, Tzarech Lachzor L'Rosh. The Mishnah Berurah in Bir Aloch and Simon Samachay quotes the Magen Avraham, and he says, "Linyan halacha im shom machmas onus b'megillah kidei ligmar skula tzarech lachzor v'lekrosa ach eino chozer mevarech aleha." Meaning, as far as bracha is concerned, we'll be making like the Rif because sofik brachas lahakel, and it's not considered a hefsek. But as far as the kriya itself, we're going to require that he go back to the beginning. Meaning, you have a double chumra here. You're accepting the Ramah and the Sar Mikutzi against the Shulchan Aruch and the Rif, and on the top of it, you're accepting the Levush, the Bach, etc., who argue with the Darchei Moshe and are unwilling to be mekil in the case of a mitzvah d'Rabbanan. Now, in the Shultus of Rav Achai Gaon, where you have the super commentary of the Netziv, the Hemek She'ilah, discussing the case of Kriyat Shema in Shoah Kidei Ligmar Skula, the Shiltos Paskins that Akoriyas HaMegillah, just like in the case of Kriyat Shema, V'shal Kidei Ligmar Skula, Lo Yotzi Yedei Chovasa. And he holds like Tosus, apparently, Masechta Rosh Hashanah, that we mentioned earlier, that Rav Ashi disagrees with Rabbi Yochanan and holds that in all mitzvahs, V'shal Kidei Ligmar Skula, is Chozer L'Rosh. Yimshal Kidei Ligmar Skula Chozer L'Rosh. Now the Netziv, in his Bir on the Shiltos, writes a little bit differently. He writes that as far as all mitzvahs HaTorah is concerned, maybe the Shultas would hold that Emshak Deligmas Kula Eino Chozel Rosh. Only with regard to Megillah, the Shultas is Machmir. There's a unique Chumrah in Megillah, a special reason why Shak Deligmas Kula Chozel Rosh, because the Megillah's Pirsum HaNes, and if he cuts it off in the middle with the Hafsaka Kol Kach Gedola, and he's Shoah Kedei Ligmar's Kula, he's not be able to pay attention and focus on the Mahalach, on the sequence, the continuous flow of the story of the Megillah, and therefore he's missing the major chunk of the Kiyum of Pirsum HaNes. According to the Tziv, it seems that everybody would be Moda, in the case of Megillah, that Shoah Kedei Ligmar's Kula Chozel Rosh, because of the special reasoning that applies to Megillah and Megillah alone. Now, what about Sicha in the middle of Kriyas HaMegillah? Rama writes in Tofresh Tzadi in Sif Hei that Hakori L'Seirgin Yotza, if he takes a pause, he's still Yotzi Afilu Im Hifzik B'Sicha Beintayim. Now, Sicha is a little bit worse than just Shehiya. And in the Note of Yehuda, he writes in Misvara, it would appear to him that although in the case of Sicha, perhaps he doesn't have to go back to the beginning of the Megillah, but he would have to recite a bracha al Mikra Megillah on the balance of the Megillah. Because whenever you haven't completed the mitzvah, and there's no Kiyum HaMitzvah, you haven't obtained the Kiyum HaMitzvah, in this case Kriyas HaMegillah, you haven't read the Megillah. And therefore, there's no difference between Sicha between the Brach in the beginning of the mitzvah and Sicha in the middle of the mitzvah. However, the Rosh in Masechta Chulin makes a distinction, and he says that if you make a Brach on a mitzvah and you began the mitzvah, if you were Sach before you completed the mitzvah, you don't have to go back to make the Brach. Like, for example, in Tekiyah Shofar, Kriyas HaMegillah, Kriyas HaHalel, in all of these cases. So it's explicit in the Rosh in Masechet Chulin that if he started doing the mitzvah, even though he was sach beintayim, he doesn't have to go back to the bracha. Now, what about a case that we discussed in our sugya of a Megillah that's missing part of the Megillah? What is the din in that case? The Gemara differentiates between kula and miktsasa. That if the Megillah is missing Tevos, the Sofer omitted certain words in the Megillah, the law depends on what that Chisaron is. Is it Kula or is it Miktsasa? So the Rambam in Perek Beis, Halacha Yud, the Vilchos Megillah, explains that if he was missing Rov, that's like he was missing the entire Megillah. But if he was missing Miut, that's called Miktsasa, and then the Megillah is Kshera. So the Rashba is not happy with this. He says, Eich Amrinan Hachashim Chisar Bamiyuta Kshera. How is it possible to say that if you omitted part of the Megillah, it's still Kshera? The Gemara says in the Hemshech HaSugya here that even according to those who say that you begin the Megillah with Ish Yehudi, they agree that you still have to have the entire Megillah written out. Which means that if the Megillah is missing something, for example, from the beginning till Ish Yehudi, even though you don't have to read that part of the Megillah, the story of the Mishta, etc., according to this particular Mandiyomer, the Megillah is Psula. So you see that even if it's missing only part of the Megillah, for example, it's missing from the beginning, Vayibim Achashverosh, until Ish Yehudi, which is less than Ruba Shel Megillah, and yet the Megillah is Psula. So the Rashba wants to distinguish between the beginning of the Megillah and the Sofa Megillah on the one hand, and the middle of the Megillah on the other hand. That if you're missing something from the beginning of the Megillah or the end of the Megillah is Psula. And therefore, if you had a Megillah that was written and it started from Ish Yehudi, it would be possible because it's missing Rosha, the beginning of the Megillah. And when the Gemara says that Chisa Mi'uta Kshera, that's talking when you're missing something in the middle, you have both the Rosh and the Sof, and the chunk that you're missing in the Megillah is less than Rov. And the beginning, and he, the Rashba, builds this sugya, this halachic sugya, based on the word igeres, that Megillah is called an igeres. We're not medagdek in the mistakes in an igeres, and therefore, if we have most of the Megillah, then the Megillah is kshera, even though we're missing so much of the Megillah. And that's because the Megillah is not only called the Igeres, it's also called the Sefer. But if it's missing from the beginning or at the end, even if it's less than half of the Megillah, and it's called the Sefer, but nevertheless, it doesn't have the status of an Igeres. And if it's missing part of the beginning or part of the or the end, that's equivalent to Nechzar Rubo, as if most of the Megillah was gone. Now, exactly how you calculate Rov of the Megillah, the Bir Halacha and Siman Tov Reish Tzadi tries to analyze that question. And he says that when the Gemara says that if he's missing Mi'uta, the Megillah is still Kshera, we don't measure that by the Rov and Mi'ut of Mispar HaOsios, but rather Mispar HaTevos. So it means that if he's missing in each Teva one letter, the Megillah is going to be Psula, even though most of the Osios are written in the Megillah. Let me also mention the Rush in Simon Dalid. He writes that B'dieved, if he leaves out part of the Megillah B'Rosha or B'Sofa, even so, HaMegillah K'shera against the Rashba that we mentioned earlier. And when the Gemara says that even according to the Mandiomer that allows you to begin the reading of the Megillah from Ishudi, nevertheless you have to write the entire Megillah, that's only L'chatchila. But B'dieved, if he wrote the Megillah and he started from Ishudi, the Megillah would be K'shera, because he has most of the Megillah written. Now the Beis Yosef here in Tofresh Tzadi wants to be mechalik in the name of the Orchas Chaim between Chiser Inyan Sholem or Chiser Posuk Echad. Which means the following, that if you're Chiser from the beginning of the Megillah till Ishudi, the Megillah is Psula, and even B'dieved, not like the Rosh, because he's missing an Inyan Sholem, a whole concept, a whole theme. But he says if you're missing a pasuk here and a pasuk there, but the theme of the Megillah is not lost in that particular section, then it could be a Megillah Kshera if it's mute. And the Meiri seems to assume that there's a distinction between Chiser and Yinsholem and Chiser Pasuk Echad, and he goes out of his way to point out that there's no distinction between Rosh HaMegillah, Emtza HaMegillah, and so forth and so on. And all this is brought down in the Bir Halacha and Siman Tov Reish Tzadi. Now, what happens if he hears the Megillah from someone, but he doesn't hear the whole Megillah, and he reads the balance of the Megillah on his own? So first, let's read the Gemara. The Gemara says, Hishmit ba hakore posuk echad, lo yomar ekras kulo vacharkach ekra oso posuk. Right, we have a problem of Lamafreya, so he cannot continue reading and then fill in that which he skipped, omitted, later on. So he's got to go back to that pasuk that he omitted, and he has to read it from there. It would seem from the Gemara that if the first half of the Megillah he heard from the Koreh, he could read the second half of the Megillah, the balance of the Megillah, and fulfill his mitzvah, even though he's reading it on his own, you know, his own personal reading, without the din of Shomei Kohana, meaning we could be mitzarif the Shomei Kohana of half the Megillah with Kriya B'Atzmo in the second half of the Megillah. And the Beis Yosef in Siman Tov Reish Tzadi quotes the same conclusion in the name of the Shiboli Aleket, that the Dalet Psukim, that the Kahal is knowing to recite them out loud, is the Koreh should read them again from the Megillah, Megillah Kshair, because the Tzimur was reading it Balpeh, they didn't read it Mitoch HaKsav. And the Beis Yosef says, even though the din is Imkara Miktsas Alpeh Yotza, but L'chatchila you have to read the entire Megillah from the Ksav. But it's clear from the words of the Beis Yosef that if he was reading and he heard from the Koreh, he doesn't have to go back and reread that which he heard from the Koreh, even though half the Megillah he heard from the Koreh, and the other half he read the Atzma. That's not a chisara. And the question that the Achronim ask here is, doesn't the Shulchan Aruch contradict himself? Because in Hilchos Birkas HaMazon and Siman Kuf Tzadi Dalid, the Mechaber writes that if three people ate together and not one of them, knows how to read Birkas HaMazon from the beginning to the end, let's say, for example, one knows the first bracha, and one knows the second bracha, one knows the third bracha. And again, we're talking before they had Siddurim, printed Siddurim. So they can do a Zimun, and everyone recites the bracha that he knows, and he's Motzi, Chavero, Yidei Chobas on the bracha that he knows. But if a person knows only half a bracha, and his friend knows another half of the bracha, they cannot join together, they cannot be mitztarev on half a bracha and half a bracha. There's no din shomea ka'one unless it's shomea bracha bishlemus, then the shomea ka'one. Now in Kriyas HaMegillah we say he heard half the Megillah from the Koreh and half from the he read himself. Now, where's the bracha shlema over here to set up shomea ka'ona? Where's the shlemus here? So one of the answers that's offered here to this lechora stira is the following. And we'll find this in a number of achronim. They say that there's a difference between half of a bracha where you cannot split a bracha into half, you know, ein bracha achas mischaleches lechatzoyin, as opposed to half of something, which is not an entity of a bracha. Now, it's the chisaron of half amir and half shmir in the case of a bracha is because there's no such thing as a matbea of half a bracha. So half a bracha doesn't count as a bracha at all. But in Kriyas HaMegillah, even though you have to read the whole Megillah, but nevertheless it can be Yotzei half with Shmir and half with his own Kriya, because even that which he heard as a half a Megillah from the Koreh, nevertheless it can be Yotzei Dechovas with that half. It's not like in the case of Bracha, where half a Bracha is not a Bracha at all, because we have a Chaloshe Matbea Shel Bracha. Now, there's a footnote here in which he writes that Matzinu b'kama makomos b'divrei Mishnah Brura she'af bracha achas yochol achalko v'lotzeis chetzi al adei amir v'chetzi al adei shmir. So he quotes the Mishnah Brura in Siman Kuf Chav Dalid that if you hear, for example, Chazor Sashatz and you yotze and the Shatz gets to Modim and he can't hear certain words from the Shatz, so he might be able to say them the Atzma, even though again he's splitting one bracha. And it becomes like Megillah, where you can hear part of the Megillah from the Koreh and part of the Megillah you recite on your own. There's also Mishnah Brura that's relevant here in Kuf Pei Gimel, that somebody heard Birkas HaMazon from his friend. He was sach ba'emtza bracha. He could be mashlin those words that he left out in the middle of the bracha. And to analyze this properly, you'd have to see Rabbi Kiveger in his Chidushim to Brachos on Daf Chofam in Beis. As far as Birkas HaMazon, when he heard it from women, from a woman, he says, she Yosef, Bemsa Birchas Birchas Aretz Bris Vitora. In other words, the woman omits part of the bracha, and the male who's listening will complete that bracha by adding those words. And again, we see clearly that you can be yotzei half a bracha with Shmiya and half a bracha with Amira. So that seems to be the final conclusion, even in Hilchos Brachos. Again, what are you going to do with the case in Shulchan Aruch Simon Kuf Tzadi Dalid in Birkas HaMazon, where you can split it up three ways if each one is reciting a whole bracha? And it seems like you cannot split a bracha, but there seem to be quite a few riots that you can be mashlim part of a bracha with your own namira. Now, as far as misnamnim is concerned, that we discussed yesterday, the Mordechai quotes Yushalmi, the misnamnim is Yotzi Dechovaso, if he reads it by, if he's the one who's reading it, but if he's listening, he's not Yotzi Dechovaso. And the Yushalmi actually quotes a Maisa with one person that was reading the Megillah in front of Rabbi Zeira, and he started falling asleep, and Rabbi Zeira said that he should go back and read it again. And the Mordechai says that the Yushalmi is not arguing with Amish. Now Amish is talking about a Korei HaMisnasim in the Misnamnim, and the Yushalmi is talking about Shomea HaMisnamnim. So that's the Mordechai, making the distinction between the Korei and the Shomea, because the Korei is able to read the words of the Megillah properly. It must be that he's still in the parish, he's still awake. But the Shomea, he's falling off. He's certainly not going to hear all the words. And this is what the Mishnah Berurah, Siman Tov Reish Tzadi, mentions and clarifies in Sifkat Mem Aleph. The Bir Agra gives a different distinction between the Shomea and the Korei. The Shulchan Aruch writes in Siman Kuf Tzadi Gimel, as far as Birkas HaMazon is concerned, if somebody doesn't understand Lashon Kodesh, he can recite Birkas HaMazon Lashon Kodesh even though he doesn't understand it. But if he's listening to someone else and he's not reciting the brachas himself and he doesn't understand the brachas, he's not Yotze. So Shomea Kona is conditional on his understanding. But as far as reading it himself without Shomea Kona, it's not conditional on understanding. And the Bir Agra writes that the source for the Shulchan Aruch and Hilchos Birkas HaMazon to be machalik, to distinguish between the Mevarech himself as opposed to the Shomea who's been Yotzim Shomea Kona, and if he doesn't understand it, the source for that is this sugya here in Megillah. As far as Megillah is concerned, if the Korei is Misnamnim, he's Yotze, but the Shomea is not Misnamnim, is not Yotze. And according to the Gra, there's an analogy between the Shomea Misnamnim and the Shomea who doesn't understand Lashon Kodesh. This is not the Mishnah Berurah. The Mishnah Berurah is saying that the difference between the Korei and the Shomea is whether or not he's actually listening and he's able to hear the whole Megillah. So the Gaon is understanding that the difference in Misnamnim between the Shomea and the Korei is because if he's Misnamnim, he doesn't understand really what's going on. He doesn't understand the Shomea. He's not able to focus his attention and to be samlev, to pay attention to what he's listening to. And the reason why he's not Yotz is because there's no Shomea Kaona if you don't understand what you're listening to. And therefore the Gaon decided to derive from this that in the case of Alazi who heard Lashon Kodesh, he's not Yotz Bishmiya because he doesn't understand the language. And he's like a Misnamnim, and his Shmiya has no meaning to it, no significance. Now, in Megillah, we hold that Elohi Shashama Shuris Yotzi Yadechovaso. Why is he different than the Misnamnim according to the Gaon? That's a Pella. And perhaps you have to distinguish between Megillah and Shar Dini Torah, because Megillah is Pirsumei Nisa. But again, according to the Gra, that Misnamnim is similar to the case of someone who doesn't understand the Megillah, it's a tzarech biyur. So the Mishnah says, "Hoysuk suv b'sam," The Mishnah goes through a whole list of different kinds of inks that he used to make the Megillah, and almost in every case it's pasul. And now the Gemara tries to explain what these various kinds of inks are like. So Haisak Suv B'Sam, the last line in Yuches Amid Beis. So Sam, the Gemara says in Aramaic, is called Sama. In the Hebrew translation he has here, based on a Sugyan Chulin, it's called Zarnich. And the next case in the Mishnah is Kumus, which the Gemara now is going to identify, Omar Abba Bar Bachana Sikra Shma. Oh, I'm sorry. First, before we get to Kumus, we have Sikra. And Sikra is a Tseva Adom. It's a red color. And it's designated for coloring doors. They use it to paint doors. Rashi tells you what it's called in French. Okay, maybe we'll get to that later if we have a French dictionary. And then we have Kumus, which is called Koma. Koma is Sraf Ilan. So they took the sap from a tree and they used it as a dye. Umamchin also b'mayim, after they dissolved this sap of a tree into water, they use it to color things. Sovimbo. I just want to see if he gives you any of the French here. Just 1 second. No, he doesn't have it here, as far as I can tell. Okay. And then we have something called Kankantum. So that's on the top of your testament olive. And the Gemara identifies that as Charta de Ushpeche. It's some sort of a sam, some sort of a drug, and it's used to polish shoes, black shoes. And apparently it's very permanent.
We also use sikra, red, chuta sikra.
Right, also to, in that case, to paint, let's say, wool or scarlet or something, right? Or the middle of the mizbeach that goes around the mizbeach. Right. Now he quotes a Rashi elsewhere in Erevin that identifies kankantom as andrimant, which I think is a word even in English. It's a French word. And again, it's tseva shachar, and it's very permanent. Very permanent. It cannot be erased, apparently. The Rashbam, on the other hand, says that kankantom is called vidriol, which is actually green in color, and it is ground up very thin until it becomes kind of blackish. So that's called vidriol. Now, the Mishnah says that you have to write the Megillah not only with dyo, that's the ink, but also on a certain kind of a cloth, as opposed to diftera, dimaliach v'kamiach v'lo ofitz. So diftera is a hide, but it hasn't been totally, completely processed. It's gone through 2 out of 3 of the stages of processing. First they took the hide and they salted it, and I guess that began to soften it up a little bit. And then kamiach, they would soak it in flour and water. Again, I don't know if this is a chametz problem on Pesach, but for low offense, they didn't do the last stage, which is called shchikas afotzim. That's the final tikkun in order to make it a cloth that's roy. So in the footnote here, he has a sort of an overview of the various stages in what we call tanning the skin, the hide. First, the option also, we dry it through malicha, by salting it. And it's certainly not kosher for anything at this point. But after it's dried up through the salting process, then they soaked it in flour and water, kidela abdo, and that would be a certain kind of an ibud. And at that point, it becomes kosher at least for a get. Then we get to the third stage of the ibud, which is shochakim oso ba'afotzim. He identifies afotzim as klipas eitz ilan. Well, I'm sorry, klipas eitz alon, an alon tree, which I forgot what it's called in English. An oak tree, I think it's called. And the klipa of the bark itself is of the oak, makes it royal exival chaldor, that completes the process of ibud, and then it's a klaf. Now, the other case which the Mishnah excludes here is niyar, which is called in Aramaic machaka, and that is a daf, a page that's made from different kinds of grasses which are crushed, and then you combine them, you connect them together with devek, like you glue them together in order to make this niyar. And basically, in order for the Megillah to be a Megillah Kshera, we need actually to take Suva Ashuris, Shalom Aleichem Moshe Awayu. It's got to be written in Lashon Kodesh. And that's based on the Pasuk Tuksiv Kiksovam Ukizmanom. It's got to be written Al HaSefer, which means a klaf, as we discussed before, the three stages of the Ibud in the klaf. Dyo, it's got to be written with ink. Okay? And the Gemara says, Minolan, how do we know that a Megillah needs to be written on a klaf, and it's got to have the Ibud, the tanning process that prepares it completely, and you need dyo, and not any other color. Because, you know, nowadays, today, everybody likes to have things that are colored. You know, they have these talisman, you've seen the talisman, multicolored talisman, the Kasonis Pasen, right? So imagine you had different colors of Megillah, that would be really cool. Uh-huh. You would jack up the market price for Megillahs, because my Megillah has 15 different colors to it. But no, we're very conservative in that sense. The Megillah has to be written in black ink. And this we derive from a pasuk in Yirmiyah HaNavi, believe it or not, Gzeir Shom. And that Gzeir Shom is called Ksiva Ksiva. Ksiv Hacha, here with regard to Megillah, it says, Vatichtov Esther HaMalka, so we have the word Ksiva. Uksiv Hasam, and in Yirmiyah HaNavi, we have a pasuk that refers to Baruch Ben Neriah. And the Navi commands Baruch Ben Neriah to write on a Megillah all the events that transpired to Klal Yisrael. And good morning. And he wanted it to be a permanent kind of writing. And that writing would also be a warning to Klal Yisrael that they had to do Tshuva Shleima, you know, because they were in Golos and they had to do Tshuva Shleima. And they would read it in a certain place and so forth and so on. Okay, we're not going to go into that. We'd like to start the new Mishnah today, but let's just read the Gzeir Shava. So we're on Daf Yutes Amud Aleph. We're about to start the new Mishnah. We're just finishing up. And it says, Vayomer Lahem Baruch. And Yirmiyahu calls out and he says, Baruch, Baruch Ben Neriah. Nipiv Yikra Elias Kol Advarim Ha'el Vani Kosev Ala Sefer B'Dyom. So you want to emphasize the word Kosev? Because just like in Megillah it says Ksiva, here also it says Ksiva. And in the case of Baruch Ben Neriah, he's commanded to write it Bidyo. So you see that we require Dyo. Just like Baruch Ben Neriah, his Ksiva would have to be on a cloth and it had to be Bidyo. So to Megillah's Esther would have to be written on a cloth and with Dyo. And that leads us to the new Mishnah. So until now we had Mishnayos that dealt with the time for Kriyas HaMegillah, which would change from one of three places. If it was a kfar, it was a small town outside the big cities, they would read the Megillah either on Yud Aleph, Yud Beis, Yud Gimel, that's called Yom HaKnisa, on a Monday and Thursday before Yud Dalet. Then there were the big cities that were open. Those are called the Prazim, the Ayoros that are not Mukafas Chom, but they're open, without a wall. And they read the Megillah on the 14th. And then we finally get to the Krachim, that are walled cities from the time, the wall is up there from the time of Yeshua ben Nun. and they read the Megillah on the 15th. Our Mishnah wants to know what happens if a person belongs, he lives permanently in one of these three areas, but on a temporary basis he's passing through one of the other areas. So for example, you can talk about a classic case would be a Ben Krach, someone who normally reads the Megillah on the 15th, but he finds himself on Purim in Tel Aviv, and they're reading the Megillah on the 14th. Does he become obligated to read it with them together? And the Mishnah says the following. Ben Ir. First, the Mishnah starts with the opposite scenario. So we're talking about someone who lives permanently, his permanent domicile is in a city which is not walled. He's meant to read the Megillah on the 14th. But Halach Lekrach, he finds himself in a walled city. Again, when we say a walled city, it means it was Mukaf Chomim Mos Yoshua Ben Nun. And there they read the Megillah on the 15th. So that's case number one. And the Mishnah is going to give all these cases and then formulate one principle that operates in all these cases. V'chein. Now we have the second case. V'uben Krach. A person who lives permanently in, let's say, Yerushalayim, a walled city. Shehalach Le'ir. And he finds himself on the 14th in a city where they read the Megillah on that day. So what is the ruling principle? Im osid lachso limkomo kore kimikomo v'im lav kore imoyim. What are his intentions? Is he there on a permanent basis, or does he intend to return? And the Gemara is going to explain what that means. I'll just give you a little bit of a preview of coming attractions. Basically, what does it mean, osid lachsar limkomo? Everything depends upon daybreak. Meaning, is he going to return home before daybreak? If he remains in that place, let's say, for example, a Yerushalmi who finds himself in Tel Aviv on the 14th and he expects to sleep over until daybreak in Tel Aviv, then he's chayv in the Megillah on the 14th. Let's take the flip case. You have somebody who is in Tel Aviv, but he finds himself on the 14th in Yerushalayim, and let's say he's going to stay over for the 15th, and that means he's going to be there even after the daybreak of the 15th, he becomes a Ben Krach for that Purim, and he has to read it together with the Krach.
Even though daybreak on the 14th, he was in Tel Aviv?
No, if he was in Tel Aviv on the 14th, that's going to be a machlok shir babli nushalmi. Does he have to read it in both places? But let's assume that according to the Bavli, even this is an issue, but according to the Bavli, if he was in Yerushalayim on the 14th, he stays overnight, and that was his plan. Again, things may change, and that's going to be another sugya, but if his plans don't change, he's going to be sleeping over on the night of the 15th in Yerushalayim. So he doesn't have to read it privately in Yerushalayim on the 14th. He can anticipate reading it together with the Bnei Akruch. Again, all this we'll get into. The Mishnah doesn't really clarify any of this. Now the second half of the Mishnah is off on a different topic, a fascinating topic. I was absolutely captured by imagination. You know, we tend to understand Megillah the way we're used to it, the way we see it. And you have to read the Megillah from the beginning, Vayivi Me'achashverosh, until the end of the Megillah when they're imposing taxes, right? And yet this is a major, major plukta amongst the Tanoim. It says the following. At what point in the Megillah is absolutely critical? So we have the first opinion, which is what we're familiar with. That's the opinion that Rabbi Meir formulates here. Korei Adam is a Megillah Yotzeh Bayidei Chavasa or Meir Omer Kula. In order to fulfill the mitzvah of Kriyas HaMegillah, you have to read the entire Megillah. If you didn't read the entire Megillah, then you're not Yotzeh. Rabbi Yehuda Omer, he says, no, you don't have to read the entire Megillah. Start with Me'ish Yehudi. The Gemara is going to analyze, why is this the beginning of the Megillah? In other words, you want to emphasize the role of Mordechai. And Rabbi Yossi says, and in the Gemara there will be other opinions, that you could start with Me'achar HaDvar Ma'elah, meaning Gidel HaMelech Es Haman, that we have to start with the story of Haman. Now I wanted to mention to you a footnote here. He says the following in the name of the Prima Gadol. Bevadei says l'chatchila, if things are ideal, hakol modim, all the shitas agree, Shekoria Samigila Kula Velo Nechleku Elo Leinyan Shasat Chak. So the machlokus is what's absolutely critical in a mitigating circumstance, a very precious situation where they're compelled to do an abridged kriya, or for example, if he comes into the Megillah reading and he missed part of it, which is the beginning that's absolutely critical, and he has to hear it. Again, we'll see many shittas, and the Gemara is going to analyze each shita. Why do you start with that particular point, and that's where it becomes critical? Okay, let's go back to the Reisha of our Mishnah. Omar Rava. Rava says, what does it mean that it depends if he's Asid Lachzar Limakomo or he's not Asid Lachzar Limakomo? Omar Rava Lo Shonu. So let's take the case of a Bet Kraft. That's always the easiest case. So you have a Yerushalmi who finds himself in Tel Aviv, and his plan is Lachzar Limakomo. He wants to go back to Yerushalayim. So he's a Ben Krach who finds himself in a city, and his plans are to go back home. And therefore the Mishnah says, Kori Kim Komo. He reads it on the 15th. Says Rav Aloshan, when does that apply? Ela Sha'asid Lachzar Belel Arbasar. He intends to go back to Yerushalayim before daybreak on the 14th. If his plan is to remain until daybreak, so not only does he find himself in Tel Aviv on the 14th at night, but his plan is to stay overnight, so even with daybreak on the 14th in the morning, he'll still be in Tel Aviv, then Kore Imahem. Amar Rava Mina Minile. How do I know such a thing? What proof do I have, what source do I have that everything depends upon where he's going to be after daybreak? Tichsiv, because the Megillah says, Al-Kain ha-Yehudim ha-Prozim ha-Yoshvim bi-Arei ha-Prozos. The rest of the pasuk reads, Osim es yom ar-Basar l'chodesh Adar. And again, there are three words in this pasuk that are totally superfluous. Let's read the pasuk. I'm going to drop three words, or two words, let's say, and tell me if you lose anything in the pshat. Al kein ha-Yehudim ha-Prozim, Osim es yom ar-Basar. What's this? Ha-Yoshvim bi-Arei ha-Prozim. I mean, you called them Prozim. You know, I'm not so thick, I can figure out what Prozim are. And then you spell it out. You say, Ha-Yoshvim bi-Arei ha-Prozim. There's some sort of a ribui here, that maybe there's someone who's a Yoshev bi-Arei ha-Prozim, but he's not really a Prozim. Now, you wouldn't describe him in his essence as a prozim, but he's Yoshvim Biari prozim. So that's the analysis of Rav. He says, Michtik Siv, it says Hayudim prozim. And therefore, Lomali Lemichtav, why does he have to say Hayoshvim Biari prozim? So there's some sort of ribui here that not only the prozim, you know, the real McCoy prozim, but even Yoshvim Biari prozim, even they read the Megillah on the 14th. Is Hakam Mashmalon. The extra words, Yoshev, Yoreh, Prozos, the Porus Ben Yomo, Nikra Porus. So we have somebody called a Porus Ben Yomo. He's not a real, genuine, full-fledged Prozzi. You know, he pays taxes in Yerushalayim or in Shushan. But he's right now, for this day, he's a Porus. Now again, it says in the Pasuk, Yom Arbasar. So the word Yom has to be emphasized here. What Yom means is something called a Yoshev Biari Prozos Yom. For they're a daytime member of the Prozos. And what does it mean, daytime? It means they're there at night, and they're there by day. It sounds like if they didn't have some sort of Shehiya, since they didn't find themselves at least for some few seconds of time at night in the Arei HaProzos, it's not enough that they came after daybreak, because that's not considered Yom. Yom means that you have to dip into the Laila. But on the other hand, the poskim say you don't have to be there with nightfall, as long as you're there sometime during the night and then you stay over till the morning. So the Iker Ben Yomo means during the morning, but yeah, it's not considered a full Ben Yomo unless you're there at night. So now Rav asks himself the following question. Okay, we have a pasuk here that tells me that somebody called a Porus Ben Yomo. But what about the opposite case? Could there be someone who's called a Mukaf Ben Yomo? And that's what the Mishnah establishes. So Ashkenaz, we find the source in the Pasuk for a Paruz Ben Yomo, right? But Mukaf Ben Yomo, Minolan. I added a few words here to the Gemara. And he says Svarahu. It makes sense because there's no difference between a Paruz Ben Yomo and a Mukaf Ben Yomo. And that's the language of Rav. He says, Mi de Paruz Ben Yomo Kari Paruz. Is Mukaf Ben Yomo Kari Mukaf. So we can apply the logic in both directions. There's no reason why we should limit this to the case of a Paruz Ben Yomo. So again, there are two categories here that are relevant to Kriyas HaMegillah. One is the Paruz Ben Yomo, and the other is the Mukaf Ben Yomo. The Mukaf Ben Yomo is a Paruz who finds himself in Yerushalayim, for example, on the 15th, night and after daybreak. Again, what we're going to have to discuss is what happens if he finds himself in Tel Aviv on Yudalit and in Yerushalayim on Tesvav. Is he chayv in the Megillah for two straight days? You know, people are hesitant about Yontif Sheni Shel Golias. Let's say on Pesach, some people don't like to eat maror two nights in a row. My father loves it. He said when he comes there to Israel, how could you have one Seder? You robbed me of another Seder. You know,
there's no answer to eat maror rest of the year. Also,
right? Yeah, but I'm saying he likes another day of Seder. You know, some people say one day ain't tug is gonna. You know, but I'll tell you this: as far as Purim is concerned, I can tell you about my youth. I don't know if you had a similar experience. We used to love to celebrate 2 days of Purim. And what we would do is, we were learning here in Yerushalayim in Yeshiva. I was about 19 years old at the time. And we went to Telstone. We had a bunch of friends in Telstone. Mm-hmm. I'm assuming Telstone is still what it was then. And they celebrate Purim on the 14th. I'm pretty sure they do.
They do the 14th, yeah, for sure.
And then we would copyright 2 days of Purim. Now the question is, were we halachically required to do so? And if we were, what we require to hear the Megillah on the 15th. And that in the Bir Aloch is a major pluta between Yerushalmi and the Bavli. So it comes out like this. If you left Yerushalayim to Tel Aviv on Yudalit and you heard the Megillah in Tel Aviv, you would not be called upon to be the Koreas of Megillah in Yerushalayim when you got back home. Because it's a suffix whether you're Chayev. It could be that once you had your one day of Purim, you were Yotze.
What about the other mitzvah?
I don't know of any other mitzvah that comes to mind where you could be a Ben Yomo. I don't know.
But the other one is of Megillah with...
Oh, I see. I'm sorry, I misunderstood you. Yeah, I thought you're asking me about other mitzvahs in the Taryag. Yeah. Yeah, I think Megillah is just a paradigm of all the mitzvahs. Right, so it's a package deal, right?
So you'd have to do Matanos Lev Yonim, you'd have to do...
Everything. Matanos Lev Yonim is without a doubt, because as we mentioned back in the beginning, but Mishloach Manos to this Purim, you become a Paruz Ben Yomo. You know, the Gemara is talking about Megillah, but it applies to all the mitzvahs. Now, what about a Ben Kfar? Here's a very interesting sugya, again, of Rava. Because the Ben Kfar read the Megillah on the Monday or the Thursday before Purim. Let it be Yudalif, Yubayis, Yigimel. Now he finds himself in the city on Yudalit. And once again, we have the same question. Does he become a Paruz Ben Yomo and he has to read the Megillah on Yudalit? Now, he's already been Yotzei the Megillah on Yudalif, Yubayis, or Yigimel, one of those 3 days. So let's look at the sugya inside. Omar Rava, Ben Kfar, Shaholach Le'ir. So he finds himself in a city. And Rashi and all the Mefarshim write, he already read the Megillah on Monday or Thursday before Purim. So Kfar Kares on Megillah B'Yom HaKnisa. And now he finds himself in the city. And Rava says, Benkach u Benkach. It doesn't matter one bit whether or not he's going to go back to the kfar, even on the night of the 14th, Korei Imohem. He has to join together with Bnei Ha'ir and hear the Megillah with them in the city. And You know, if I were to take this case and place it in the broader perspective of a Paros Ben Yomo or Ben Krach Ben Yomo, we see two major differences. First difference is, here, he's only in the other place, right? He's in the ear, only for the nighttime. He doesn't have to stay over to the morning in order to be chayev. That's number one. Difference number two is that here, clearly, he's going to hear the Megillah a second time. In the Bavli, that's not clear with regard to for example, a Paros Ben Yomo, that when he gets back after a day of Purim, he has to celebrate another day of Purim back in Yerushalayim on the 15th. Here, he's going to have to go back and he's going to have to join the Bnei Yair, even though he already had his Purim, so to speak. And the reason for these distinctions is because the true Zman of Purim is the 14th, not 11, 12, or 13. We made we bent the halach a little bit backwards to be flexible for the sake of the Bnei HaKfarim, but if he finds himself in the city, well, that's the real Purim. And again, Eric, we're going to have your question here. Does he celebrate Purim on the 14th? Now, it's possible, and I think we discussed this way back when, we need a chazara, that even in a regular classical case of the Bnei Kfarim, they're going to celebrate Purim in the Kfar on the 14th.
Right. They didn't. I think.
Did we come to that conclusion?
It didn't seem like all the other mitzvahs.
Correct. What we're going to do is we're going to set up a Kriyas HaMegillah for them on Yud Aleph, Yud Beis, Yud Gimel, but Purim remains Yud Aleph. And here in this case, what we're saying is that not only will they celebrate Purim on Yud Aleph, but they're going to have to hear the Megillah on Yud Aleph. And the poskim are medayik here, that it says Kori Imahem, and the language of Rav is very meticulous. Kori Imahem means that it's not enough that he goes back to the Kfar and reads the Megillah on the 14th when he gets back, but he's got to join with the Tzibur, with the Kahal, and hear the Megillah on the 14th in the big city.
One thing we haven't addressed, this is all about the Megillah reading of the day, which is the Iker Mitzvah, but we also read at night. So
let's say this Kfar guy, you know, he's a villager and he finds himself in the big city on the night of the 14th. He's going to have to join together with the big city slickers and read the Megillah on the 14th, even though he already read the Megillah back in his village on the 13th.
But when they read they didn't read it back in the village. They had the reading in the city.
Right, and that's what I'm saying, that Imahim means it's not enough that he reads it privately, either here or there. He's going to have to read it and hear it from the communal reading in the city. But that's the Imahim here.
When we go back to the person who's planning out, who, if a person doesn't know whether he's going to be there or doesn't think he'll be there till daybreak, does he read at the night with the... If he goes to Tel Aviv on the night, he doesn't read at the night.
He's completely potter.
And if he ends up being there in the morning...
Nevertheless, he's potter, because it all goes by his original intention.
Okay. But he would still... But if he ends up being there in the morning, he does have to join them during the day.
If he was potter at night, he's potter by day.
Okay.
In other words, if his plan was, I'm leaving at 3 in the morning, mm-hmm. and then he missed the train, he missed the boat, and he was there at 6 a.m., you know, with daybreak, he will not read the Megillah. He's got to read the Megillah on the 15th.
I mean, but he's got to make sure to get back to Yerushalayim, because if he doesn't get back to Yerushalayim...
Or he'll read it on his own, on the 15th. It's a real B'dievet situation. Okay. Hopefully, he missed the boat, but he'll make the boat after 6 a.m. Okay. My timer... Dahai kibnei ha'ir boy lemikri, says Rava, this villager really belongs to the city in terms of his ikar chiyuv. His ikar chiyuv, his main chiyuv, is to read the Megillah on the 14th. Rabbanan hu dakilu al akfarim. The Rabbanan bent over backwards to create this possibility for the Bnei Akfarim to read on Yom HaKnisa, which is the Monday or Thursday before. Kidei, and for what purpose? Sheyu. We really wanted them to be free from all responsibility on Purim, because these were the villagers. The villagers were the farmers, and they would supply the big city slickers with water and with food. And we wanted to make sure that everyone could celebrate Purim to its maximum. And that would require that the Bnei HaKfarim, who played this key role of supplying water and food for the people in the cities, that they would be free on Purim.
But if they're supplying water and food on Purim, then don't they have to go into the city to supply it? And if they enter the city, as soon as they enter the city, they're obligated to hear their...
Well, that's why the Gemara mentions the Krachim. You see where it says the Krachim? So if you take a look in the footnote here, again, he has a long list of Mefarshim who say that the Gemara uses the word Bnei HaKrachim. And it would seem that the purpose here is for the Krachim. So the Krachim celebrate Purim on the 15th.
So they say they can write to there.
So let's assume that he's already read the Megillah on the 14th. He's now free on the 15th. And he's going to supply... Now again, I'm not sure who actually carries the water. You know, it may be... You know, I'm not sure who's in charge of transportation.
Yeah, the one other note, by the way. This note and that back on...
Yudfes?
Amud Bet. When we were talking about this, that the conclusion of the Gemara there was that it wasn't in order to... that they be available, but that was more of a reward for them having provided food and water to the city.
Right. That's he has a big deal also about this.
Yeah, so why is
this a reward for them, or is this for the benefit of the Krachim?
Because Rebbe seems to be saying that it's
for the benefit of the Krachim, right?
Yeah.
In any event, what we have here is a fundamental connection between even the Bnei HaKfarim and Yudalit. We're going to make an exception in order to facilitate their ability to be free on Purim in order to supply water and food. So he says, Hanimili, when are we going to exclude them, so to speak, or let's say relieve them from the obligation of Yudalit? That's ki ise biduchte. That's because they're back in the farms, in the villages, and they're busy, you know, preparing the mayim and the muzzam. Aval ki isa v'ir, if they find themselves in the city on the 14th, they have to read it together with the Bnei Ya'ir. Esve Abai quotes a Brisa. And the Brisa seems to contradict Rava. Now this Brisa is a very questionable Brisa. What we're going to see is that you cannot read the Brisa as it's written. I don't know if you're familiar with this term. There's something called Mishabeshta. There are two types of brises. 90% of the brises that we know are genuine, reliable brises. But there's some brises that, over the course of time, they got corrupt and the version is not reliable. And we're going to soon see that Abaye is going to base himself on a bit of a questionable brisa. And that's why Rav is going to come back and he's going to say, well, you know, you yourself have to admit that you're playing around with the text of the brisa, so therefore don't attack me. But what does it say in the Braisa? It says here in the Braisa, Ben krach shaholach le'ir, benkach ubenkach kore kimakomo, which literally translates as if in all events, in all cases, no matter what the scenario is, he's going to read on the 15th. Now that's impossible. It cannot be so, because the Mishnah says explicitly that a ben krach could become a paras ben yomo under certain circumstances, if he finds himself in a city on the 14th. Therefore, Abai says, Ben Krach Salkadaitach? Are you reading this Brisa the way it says it? It can't be. Why? Because the Mishnah is already established, Be'im Asid Lachzor Talya Milsa. Everything depends upon whether it's Asid Lachzor, whether he plans to go back to the Krach, as we said before, during the course of the night, or whether he plans to stay overnight in the ear. But you can't make a flat statement that in all, you know, unconditional absolute statement in all circumstances the Ben Ir is going to read, I'm sorry, the Ben Kraft is going to read on the 15th. Elolav, but rather we have to make one little change. I'm being facetious here, one little change in the text of the Brisa. And instead of reading it as Ben Krach, you read it as Ben Kfar. I mean, both are two words that start with a chaf and have three letters to it, and the ratio is common to both. So there was a mistake here in the transmission. So now it comes out like this, that a Ben Kfar is Kore Kimakomo. Right? It doesn't say Kore Imahem the way Rava would have had it, but rather Kore Kim Koma, which means that he reads it on the Yom HaKnisa. So it means Beikach Hu Beikach, no matter where he finds himself, even if he finds himself on the 14th of the city, he's nevertheless going to read, he's going to read the Megillah on Yom HaKnisa, and finito, and that's the end of the story. There's no need to impose upon him an additional Chi of Kriya. Whereas Rava took the opposite stand. The Rava says if he finds himself on the 14th in the city, no matter what, even if he's only staying there for half the night, he has to read the Megillah with him at night. So Rava turns back and he says, Lav terutzei metarzis. You yourself admit that you have to ask a kasha and answer a kasha. You have to rewrite the text of the Brisa. It doesn't say Ben Krach, but rather it should be read Ben Kfar. Is Tony, I'm also going to play, you know, I'm also going to find that this text is very flexible, and I'm going to change the text, and I'm going to read it to me, instead of reading it Kore Kimakomo, meaning that he's Yotze with his Kriya on Yud Gimel, we should read it Kore Imayim. Now admittedly, Kore Imayim is a little bit of a more radical change here, in the version of the Brisa, but he's going to read it Kore Imayim, which means he reads it together with the Bnei Ha'ir on the 14th. And what basically I think Rav is saying here, I didn't find this anywhere, but I think that's the thrust of what's going on here, is that if this Brisa is the Girsa, the text of the Brisa is unreliable, then let's be very flexible with reading the Brisa. So instead of reading it Kore Kimkomo, you should read it Kore Imayim. Okay, so we have another few minutes. Let's just see what we have. Remember that the Mishnah quoted a number of opinions as to what part of the Megillah is absolutely critical that you must read. So we had Rabbi Meir holds you have to read the whole Megillah. Rabbi Yehuda says Me'ish Yehudi, and Rabbi Yossi says Me'achar Atvarim Ha'Eila. So now the Gemara brings another opinion. Tanya Rabbi Shimba Yochai Omer mi balaila hahu.
Wow.
That means you can drop the first five chapters of Kriyas HaMegillah.
That's right.
For late sleepers, that's great. You know, just show up when they get up to the sixth chapter. Again, you'll miss the bracha. That's you probably would have to make the bracha on your own and then listen to balaila hu nado shasam no. Wow. Omer Rabbi Yochanan v'kulan. Basically, all of the shittas that we have, Mikra Echa Darsha. This is at the end of the Megillah, in Perek Tes, Pasuk Chav Tes. It says, Vatichtov Ester HaMalka U'Mardechai Yehudi Eskol Tokef. Now the word Tokef here is the word we want to emphasize. Tokef in Hebrew means Chozek, meaning what is the most powerful miracle here? That's why we're reading the Megillah Pirsume Nisa. Okay, so now what is the miracle? Let's go through the shittas. Man diyama, this is Rabbi Meir who holds kula, you have to read the entire Megillah. Tokfo shalachashverosh. Now here's where the beginning of the Megillah and the end of the Megillah connect each other. It's like a circle that comes around to connect. The beginning of the Megillah emphasizes the power of Achashverosh. Now keep in mind that Achashverosh was the one who signed, you know, he gave the ring over, but I'm saying he signed the Gzerah. So if the Gzerah to destroy the Jewish people was signed by Achashverosh, so we want to start with the power of Achashverosh.
Every reference to the Melech refers to is really a hint at Akash Baruch, but then we're also talking about the power of Akash Baruch.
Correct.
Too,
correct. And that's it. That was showing that Akash Baruch Hu is greater than even the superpowers. You know, you could be the head of the head, but Mandi Omar Mi Ish Yehudi. So what's the Tokef here? The word Tokef is referring to Tokfo Shel Mardechai, because Mardechai is the one who is the divine agent, divine miracle, to bring about the miracle. So we're going to start with Ish Yehudi. Uman Diomar Me'achar Advarim Ha'ele, Tokfo Shel Haman, meaning to show and demonstrate how great Haman was in terms of his prestige and his power in the Malchus and his Gzera, and yet HaKadosh Baruch Hu defeats Haman. And here I have a footnote that I wanted to share with you. Chav Tes, let me just find it. He says the following, in the name of the Ben Yehoyada, that's the Ben Ish Chai, he says, Biglal Tokfo Gdulaso, it's only because Haman was so powerful, and he was elected to such a powerful position. Nasan Enov Laro Gesam Kulo. In other words, if Haman would have been just a, you know, he's an office in the king's court like many others, then maybe he would have had Haman killed, but he wouldn't have had the chutzpah to kill an entire nation. Now, why is it that Hashem, again, this is the Ben Yehoyada, you don't have to agree with him, but it's an interesting philosophy. He says, why is it that Hashem intervened to foil the plans of Haman? And the answer is because Haman wanted to destroy the entire Jewish people. So it's amazing. There's a Chagadya here, there's a domino theory. A, Haman is elected to the highest position, right? He's the viceroy, the second in command. To you and I, that's tragic, right? Tragic. Yeah. I mean, he's gonna destroy it. But Dafka, because of his election, that's why he's unable to realize his plan. Why? Because HaKadosh Baruch Hu is gonna intervene when all of Klal Yisrael is at stake. It reminds me of Parshas Balak. Do you remember where he says, Mirosh Surim Arena? Yes. You know, Balak takes Bilam, he says, you know what, I'll show you Miktas, part of the Bnei Yisrael. You can curse part of Bnei Yisrael. You're looking at the entire Bnei Yisrael, you'll never defeat them. So this is the paradox. Tukfo Shel Haman. Because of Tukfo Shel Haman, and he attacks the entire Jewish people, that's why HaKadosh Baruch Hu brings back the Yeshua. It's a whole other twist.
I forget the exact phrase, but you know, the seeds of destruction were kind of planted in the beginning, and in
this gzeira, the fact that Haman was elevated, was elected to that position.
Already his downfall.
Umandi Omer Balayla Hu Nodla Shnas HaMelech. This Reb Shimon in the Braisa, he holds a Tukfo Shel Nes. And when does the Nes begin? That's when Balayla Hu Nodla Shnas HaMelech. And Eric, as you say, well, Melech here is referring to the Melech. Melech Malchei Hamloch. Okay, let's see if we can read one or two more lines, and then I'll let you go. Rav Huna Omar, Rav Huna says that I have a different pasuk, and everybody, all the Tanoim, are arguing about how to interpret this pasuk. Mehoch, here's the pasuk. This is also an Esther Perek test, but at the beginning of that Perek, it says, Uma ro'u al kocha, uma higia alehem. Okay, Rav Huna, so this is going to be more complicated. I don't want to botch it up in 2 minutes. Basically, what Rav Huna is going to do here is he's going to split this pasuk into two halves. There's something called Maro'u al-Kacha. Okay, Kacha means what happened at that particular time, what was obvious to the naked eye. Umahi Gia Alehem, and what happened as a result of that which we saw, that which anyone could see. There's a very subtle and profound point here. So we'll call it a day here. I'm going to make myself a note that we got up to Rav Huna. Okay then? So we're good to have you back, Moshe. Thank you.